You're in tune with What It Is on WNCW. I'm Joe Kendrick, joined by Carol Rifkin and Fred Mills. Jimi Hendrix, Valleys of Neptune, has been released some 40-plus years after it was recorded. We're doing a little evaluation and a little Hendrix talk today on What It Is.
Well, with Hendrix, first to even discuss an album in 2010, you sort of got to think back to the history of Hendrix's releases. I mean, he only did three original studio albums, Are You Experienced, Axis Bold as Love, and Electric Ladyland. Sometimes people forget with, you know, the dozens and dozens of albums that they can find in the bins, you know, 99% of anything they find by Hendrix was released after his death, and there has been sort of a tangled history of archival material for him. Some controversial releases where the producer went back and added after the fact some backing music from studio musicians. In other instances, some controversy about remixing and remastering material. And for a while, the Hendrix estate was a little bit in turmoil, but maybe starting in the late 90s, Experience Hendrix LLC, which is overseen by his sister, Janie Hendrix, sort of stepped in and said, okay, hold on, we're going to do the archives properly. We want to do it with some sensitivity. Obviously, they want to make a buck, but they wanted to try to present the Hendrix legacy in a more systematic and perhaps even a more tasteful way that could appeal to fans and possibly even bring in a whole new generation of fans, too. I remember ordering mail order only live releases from Experience Hendrix. I remember getting live at Clark University, live at Oakland Coliseum, and even the occasional studio collection. There was one in 2000 called Morning Symphony Ideas. So beginning back then, I think that they realized we have a vested interest in doing this right, and there's no question that they've got tons of material in the vaults from live concerts to studio material. I believe recently in an interview, Janie Hendrix said they've got enough stuff in the vaults to release stuff for at least another 10 years. So that brings us to Valleys of Neptune, which released on March 9th. And it's a pretty decent collection. I was a little underwhelmed at first by the title track, which was cut in 70 with Hendrix, Mitch Mitchell, Billy Cox, and Juma Sultan, which I believe is the lineup that performed at Woodstock with Hendrix. And there's other material, most of it from 69, with the original Hendrix Experience, or in some tracks, Billy Cox on bass instead of Noel Redding. And then there's a few other tracks that were kind of different versions of familiar songs like Stone Free and Red House and Fire. Even a pretty killer version of Sunshine of Your Love with some interesting additional percussion thrown in. It's not a perfect album, and it's certainly not as cohesive as a classic like Electric Ladyland, but it does have its moments, and I think that it does the Hendrix legacy proud.
I wasn't sure how this was going to stand the test of time, really. For me, I wasn't as great a fan. I mean, I appreciate Jimi Hendrix, but I'm sure wasn't as great a fan as you all were. I remember the impact of his clothing and his music and his appearance and how important he was. But I wondered if his guitar playing and singing would stand the test of time this long afterwards, except for hardcore fan. And I really think it does. Even though there's some sloppy, and these obviously weren't his first take on some of this stuff, guitar playing, it's Jimi Hendrix is still great on guitar. I actually appreciated his singing more now. It has almost a Johnny Cash kind of quality that, having just talked about that, he's got a really, you know, it's Jimi Hendrix. When you hear
sure.
it, it's very it, distinctive,
yeah.
And it makes you wonder what it would have become if he had lived.
Now, I haven't heard the album all the way through yet, and I'll admit that the tunes are good, and it's refreshing to hear something, quote, new from Jimi Hendrix, but it might not be quite to the level of some of the smash hits from his three proper studio records before his death. You got to wonder how much different this would be had he lived, and how this album specifically would have sounded.
Or would he have even done it?
Well, you know, that's the perennial question. And one thing we had been talking about before we started taping this segment is people always wonder, what would Hendrix sound like if he'd lived? Would he have gone into jazz? Would he have kind of become the grand old man of blues? Would he just be another oldies guy traveling around playing 30 minutes of the hits? Would he have gone into hip-hop? Who knows? It's a fool's game to even speculate on that. What we do know is that he recorded an enormous amount of material shortly before his death, because he was able to basically have free studio time. And sometimes I've heard that he would be in the studio 24/7 just laying down ideas, not necessarily full songs, but ideas that could later have been fleshed out by an ensemble. That said, I believe Experience Hendrix LLC and the Hendrix heirs did a good job of picking material. I believe original Hendrix engineer Eddie Kramer was involved too, because there's really some buried gems on this album. Like the very last song is one from 69 called Crying Blue Rain, which is Jimmy and Noel and Mitch plus a percussionist. And it's this very cool kind of a jammy sounding thing that sounds like it could slot into the middle of a Government Mule concert. I mentioned Sunshine of Your Love earlier, a very unique version. Doesn't necessarily strip the Cream version, but it certainly gives you an alternate look at how that song can be approached. The Red House that I mentioned, again from 69 with the original Hendrix Experience, a different version from the one we're all familiar with. It's a little slower, almost more mournful. Carol, you mentioned his voice. That's one thing that comes through. There's some by-the-numbers Hendrix riffs on here, a lot of familiar themes that surface, but his singing really shines.
Right, yeah.
I think perhaps they maybe have selected tracks to give that, because he always had a soulful voice, but you know, sometimes a Hendrix song sometimes would be this perfunctory couple of verses, and then he goes into the guitar break, and that's what people remember, the guitar pyrotechnics.
Yeah, so, I don't know that there's that many. Did you think there were very many guitar surprises?
Not really. It's nice to hear, but it's,
yeah,
like I said, it's,
it was really good.
There's some familiar melodic themes and rhythmic motifs. He definitely had a comfort zone that he fell back on. And again, like we said, he was recording so much in a compressed period of time, it's inevitable that he would recycle and restate some themes over and over.
What stood out to me was the vocals. Like, Joe, when you were talking about the two that you've been playing here on WNCW, on the second one, I almost wondered, I don't remember on the mix of Jimi Hendrix material if the vocals were mixed as loudly before. It was always about the guitar, and it seems almost intentional on this recording. I think the vocals are mixed at a hotter and louder level, and you hear what a great singer he is.
Well, one thing that seems to be a natural result of all of this studio time might be, and like you said, Fred, it's kind of a fool's game to say this, but I think that Jimmy was going into the studio and maybe more in the fashion of the Beatles and having that time to explore, to experiment, and out of that, I think you might have had another phase of Jimmy's music in that same time frame of the late 60s, early 70s, that would have made this album sound significantly different than what we're hearing today. However, it's wonderful to have Valleys of Neptune.
Well, that's true, because it's known that he was getting kind of weary about live performances. He might have pulled the Beatles and just gone into the studio. You know, he was a master in the studio, and he surrounded himself by very smart people like Eddie Kramer. So, you know, what could have happened? I don't know. One thing I should add, this is important to note, that none of this happens in a vacuum. There is a new reissue series going on through Experience Limited and Legacy Recordings. So they're re-releasing the first three albums, plus smash hits finally returning to the marketplace, and First Rays of New Rising Sun, the true posthumous album that he was working on that came out a few years ago on MCA. These are all coming out as deluxe editions with DVDs. So there's, you know, a method to the madness here. It's not just, oh, we've got found some tracks into the studio, we'll throw it out and make the fans happy. This is sort of the catnip to lead them on to the next stuff. And it's been an interesting several years in the Hendrix universe, from that lawsuit that his brother Leon, or maybe his half-brother Leon, filed after Hendrix's dad Al died. And Leon was written out of the will, so Leon sued, and I think he lost. Janie Hendrix has pretty much an iron grip on the family in that regard. There was even, I remember coming across this electric Hendrix vodka
and
that got
marketed.
And now
you can't kick back with the reissues to any Hendrix electric vodka.
You got to have some of the electric vodka, but unfortunately it got taken off the market because it was not authorized. So, again, Hendrix is a great artist and icon, and there's no question he is culturally significant. But there's all this other commercial material baggage that goes with him no matter where that legacy follows.
We're talking about the music, the legacy, and the new album from Jimi Hendrix today on What It Is. What are your thoughts? Email us whatitis at wncw.org. For Public Radio, I'm Joe Kendrick, joined by Fred Mills and Carol Rifkin. Until next time.